Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up a bird, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Fresh new start, and they never will bring you there. So let's talk about it when life ends on the air.
Hi, good morning, everyone. We got lucky up in Upper Westchester. The snow went someplace else. Thank God it's freezing outside. But we're about to go back in time to the 80s. And before I introduce this award-winning, phenomenal author, I promised my niece I would do something that she's going to be, I hope she's okay with it. My niece Carly tried out for Vocal Star, and she was one of 10 contestants, and she just came back from Los Angeles, and she won first place in Image. She was fantastic, and she made her aunt super-duper proud. And I put the video of her audition and the video of her getting an award and a video of my beautiful child on Facebook, and anybody that has a nice comment, feel free to comment about Carly Tappan. And now, the award-winning author of Bread, Bags, Bullies, and Surviving the 80s, when we finally have cable TV, MTV, miniskirts. I was the queen of miniskirts at work. They used to figure out how to measure them. Pac-Man, Matlock, Flashdance, and my favorite headbands is here, Steve in Manchester. Good morning. I'm so glad you're here.
Good morning, friend. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
I am excited. So, of all the time periods in the world, what made you choose this time period, and what research did you do? Because, you know, growing up in some time period, whatever it was, this is really realistic, and it brought back memories to a lot of people. So what made you choose the 80s?
So, as you know, I usually write tearjerkers, right, for a female audience.
Yep.
And, you know, I've established that readership over the last 15 years. So this is, you know, a bit of a departure from what I normally write. But it was a lot of fun. My father passed away the September before last, and he had a great sense of humor. So the book is really, it's kind of odd to say that, you know, my father passed, and through the grieving process, I produced a comedy. But my dad had a great sense of humor. And so the book is really a thank you letter to him, but it's also a love letter to the 80s. So I grew up in the 80s. A lot of the research was me just living through the 80s. I will say this, when I started to write the book, I went back, did a ton of research on the movies and TV shows, the food, the fashion, and it was just a lot of fun to relive a lot of that stuff, you know, that we had already gone through. So it was fantastic. I've always loved the 80s, and I wanted to kind of, write an homage to that. And so far, since the book's come out, people have really, really embraced it. They love the nostalgia.
I loved it, too, because Cheryl knows, when I sit down and read a book and I just read it, I'm in big trouble. I just sat down and read it. You know, it was good because it wasn't the typical murder mystery that I'm, you know, read all the time. And it wasn't the typical memoir that said, this book, this chapter is this person and that person. I go, no, don't put me to sleep anymore. I don't think I can handle it. So the prologue was really interesting. And as an educator, I identify when people get bullied. I hit the roof. So how did you create this family? And why did you mirror, I love, Dylan, Alex, like Wally, and Cockroach? I love Cockroach. He's my favorite character.
Yeah. It's funny you say that because Cockroach is, fashioned after my younger brother. So I grew up with two brothers. I was 16 years old. My mom had a girl. And then 5 years later, had another little girl. So I have two sisters, same parents. But they grew up, you know, much later than my brothers and I. So I went to my brothers and basically asked their permission to write this book. It's not, I will say this, I mean, it's based on our childhood, but it's fictionalized to the umpteenth, right? So I embellished on pretty much everything. But Cockroach is basically, you know, fashioned after my younger brother. My father, you know, growing up, one of his favorite shows was Hogan's Heroes. And the little Frenchman on the show, his nickname on the show is Cockroach. So that was kind of a wink to my dad, you know, to put that nickname in there.
Well, my dad is where I get my warped sense of humor, too. He's the only one besides me that has a sense of humor. My brother has none. My sister had no sense of humor. And the short love side of the family is where I get it from. That's, what can I say? So,
right.
Why did you start the novel with Alex, to see, getting bullied and Dylan trying to toughen him up? How does Herbie deal with this situation in the present? Because bullying is a serious issue even now, every
right.
single day. We read it on the news. Not even with kids in school, just grown-ups in general and what's
right.
going on.
Right.
So how did you decide that?
So what I wanted to do is, you know, I believe that bullying has existed through each generation, right? I think that it's evolved and it's certainly changed. So I wanted to show how bullying was a little bit different in the 80s and how, I should say, different in the sense of how people reacted to it, right? So what I wanted to do is put Herbie, who's the main character, so everybody in the, you know, who's reading the book is going to see it from his point of view, right? And I wanted to start the book in the present, where Herbie has a couple sons and one of the sons is being bullied, and he starts to explain to him how to handle it, how to take care of it. And the kid, as you know, is like, yeah, you really don't understand that. And the father flashes back to the 80s, to when, you know, him and his brothers were growing up and how they handled, you know, bullying. In fact, the book, in my opinion, starts when you get on the on the bus and Wally's being bullied. But to come back out of the 80s and back into the present, so that, again, he can share some of the wisdom, right? So, I mean, it's a funny thing, now that I've had kids and my children are somewhat grown, you know, you think that you're going to save them from all the stuff that you had to go through. And what you realize later on is that they're going to go through it anyway. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, you can tell them that they're not alone. They're not the first person that this has happened to. But, you know, I got bullied when I was a kid. My sons got bullied. It's really how you react to that and really how, you know, whether or not you internalize that and that becomes who you are.
Yeah, I know. The kids in my school got bullied a lot, but then I was in union, and I unbullied everybody. We had a program called peer mediation. So if there was a fight,
right.
and I'm little, and I had to break up the fight, too. And
right.
I did. I learned.
Yeah,
there was peer mediation and sort of like a calm way of straightening things out and getting them to understand. And if they didn't do it, then the phone call was made and you got suspended. Oh, well, too bad. And
right.
try to, you know, not do that. So you take a trip back in time and meet this family. How would you describe them? You describe, how did you create them on pages 9 to 19? How would you introduce
right.
us to this family and their wants and thoughts? Because they're not the typical family, as far as I know. They're different.
No, I would say that they're blue collar, you know, salt of the earth
yeah.
type folks. And probably closer to the poverty level, the middle class. So they came up, you know, sharing everything and passing everything down. I think because it was three boys growing up together, you know, you have a bit of chaos going on and even mayhem, right, where they're physically aggressive toward each other, they're verbally aggressive toward each other. And I wanted that to be prevalent in the book, but I also wanted everybody to feel the love that they had for each other, right, that, you know, I may fight my brother, but, you know, if somebody else goes after my brother, then I have his back, right? So, you know, a brother's love is a brother's love. And I really wanted to establish that. I think that, you know, if I created the father as being somewhat nuts and the mother as being equally crazy in different ways, you know, and then you have the three boys coming up in the house. And again, it just sets the tone when you put characters in a book like that. It sets the tone for some real comedy. And my hope is that, you know, folks, even if readers didn't grow up in that type of family, that they could relate to, you know, a lot of what was in the book and be able to laugh at it.
No, I understand. So what are some of the ways they ended? They didn't have all the modern conveniences that other people did. So they didn't have, you know, they had, you know, like Pac-Man and stuff like that. But what are some of the
right.
ways they entertained themselves? And the parents seemed very, very unconventional. They were kind of different,
yes.
let me tell you. Yeah. So how did you create
that?
I sometimes I got mad at them and go like, are you seriously making them do that?
Right. Well, I think that they were, I mean, old school, right? Like, so, you know, if I talk to my grandparents and they explain what their childhoods were like, you know, it was very difficult. It wasn't an easy thing. They spent most of their time working, doing chores, in some respect, even, you know, raising money for the family. And then you get into my parents' generation, and I think things get a little bit easier for them, but they were still somewhat hardened. And then you got into, you know, my generation, which, you know, we grew up in the late 70s and 80s, so things were getting better. Technology was starting to come to the forefront, but there was still that almost harshness to it, right? Where you know, there were hardly helicopter parents. These people weren't hovering over their kids, right? And again, that was very intentional too, Fran, right? Like I look around today and I see parents, and you know, if a kid falls down and starts crying, you know, the next time you see the kid, you know, he or she's wrapped in bubble wrap, right? So I think is a way to go to extremes. And I wanted to show in this book where it's funny, you know, you see a contrast to the way children are being raised today versus the way that we came up in the 80s, which at times was, you know, a little, like I said, a little bit harsh.
No, I agree. I mean, if you fell down back then, you just got right up. You went to the doctor and he was going to give you a shot of penicillin. Suck it up, kid. You got tough. I didn't get this way for nothing. I grew up in the South Bronx, seriously. You know what? You're better off because you can deal with other situations better. And I taught in a tough school in the Bronx and didn't even bother me. You got to be tough, but you have to have a sense of humor to a point. Now, mother, I wanted to scream at her. It's snowing. There's a blizzard. And poor Herbie had to go shopping. How come? I was so worried about him. Because I can't walk in one drop of ice or anything. So how come she sent him out to go shopping? I wanted to hit her. Like, are you serious?
Yeah. I think that was part of it. I will say, based on fact, and it wasn't really driven by my own mother, but, you know, back in the day, I mean, today, you know, if there's a drop of rain or a little bit of snow, I mean, it's like pulling teeth out of a rhino, right, to get a kid in a snowsuit and get them to go play outside. You know, back then, you were outside. I mean, it was, you know what I mean? Even if it was snowing, we were outside. So I think, you know, what I wanted to create in the parents was, you know, toughen up, kid, go do what you need to do type of deal. And I know in some parts of the book, it's a little bit extreme, but it's intentionally so, right? And again, it was really meant to create some humor in it, right, where this kid has to walk through a blizzard to go run an errand for his mother. But again, you know, a lot of it was just really geared toward comedy.
I understand because, you know, back then they didn't close schools in the snow.
No, you walked.
You walked. As a matter of fact, I taught in the school in the Bronx, and when I moved someplace else, I lived like 10 minutes away, and they would say, "You're not taking off today. I used to walk in 22 inches of snow to get there just to help run this school. So they didn't close it like they do now with the drop of hell. They don't close New York City ever, but that's beside the point. So, cockroach, the poor baby. Why was he so afraid of everything? And why was he the brunt of pranks?
There's two answers to that. One, I think at a certain age, you know, everybody's afraid of something, right? And sometimes the list is long, especially when you're younger. So because he was the younger brother, you know, when you know, in any book, we call it a novel, we call it a goat, right? Somebody that gets picked on, somebody that takes the brunt of it. It only makes sense when you look at hierarchy, which is similar to a prison, right? When you're growing up in a family like that, that he's going to take the brunt of it. So the pranks he's going to take, it's almost like a training ground with his brothers where they're toughening him up. Each one of them have gone through it. Now they're putting him through it. Most of the pranks fall on him. And his fears, and I think for the book, if people ask me really what the plot line is, it's really about overcoming fears as a child so that you're prepared for adulthood, right? So with Wally, it was the bully. You know, with Herbie, it was getting the courage to approach this girl that he really likes. And then I put all the rest on Cockroach because of his age. And, you know, when he starts to talk about some of the stuff that he's afraid of, and that's stuff that he needs to work through, right? So because of where he lines up in the family, it kind of worked pretty well.
That I do know. So the mother refers to them as animals. What can I say?
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of like not great. But, yeah, my aunt used to call everybody gems, and all of us. So what happens on the bus that he gets, well, he gets bullied? This could happen, and I've seen it. And who is Owen? Why didn't anyone want to face him down? You know, the biggest bully is the one that's scared the most. We know that. He gets scared the most. So why didn't the bus driver help him? And I've seen that happen. I mean, at the end of the day when I had to go outside and help on the bus, I would literally get on the bus and might make sure nothing happened and dare anybody to have a fight. But the bus driver, why didn't he help them? That's his job, to protect the kids, but obviously they don't want to get involved.
Yeah, I think back in the day it was a little bit different. I mean, there was, you know, I've had, you know, we have four kids, my wife and I together, and you know, three of them. Two of them out of college, one's in college, and I have the last one in high school. And the way that things are dealt with today are very, very different, right? So when I went to high school, middle school, high school, I mean, there were multiple fistfights. I mean, it was, you know, constant, you know, people getting into fights. And it wasn't just the guys. The girls were fighting, too. And a lot of that carried over to the bus. That doesn't happen today. I mean, I'm not saying it doesn't ever happen, but it doesn't happen the way that it used to, where, you know, people were standing up to bullies and they were fighting and, you know, that type of stuff. I think in this book, again, really intentional, where the bus driver overlooks it, lets them take care of it. I'm not saying it's right by any stretch, but I think it's very realistic when you look at the time frame.
Yeah, you do. And there's cyberbullying now, too. It's even worse. I mean, the kids killing themselves because some stupid kid bullied them. That's ridiculous.
And that's the thing too, right? Like I think about when we were kids, you know, even if you got bullied, when you got home in the afternoon, it was done at least until the next day, right? If it was a Friday afternoon, at least you had the weekend off. My kids get home and it continues, right? Because of social media, which is, you know, as much upside as there is to social media, you know, it can also play the devil, right? So at least we had that. I mean, I think we were more physical in the 80s and the way that we dealt with things, but I don't think we tortured each other as much. I mean, today it's like psychological warfare with social media.
Well, I'll tell you, my sister was bullied by her teacher, and my mother was PTA president, and she quickly took care of that. My sister was very beautiful, and she was thin, and the teacher weighed 500 pounds, and she resented the fact that my sister reminded her of hers. And kids bullied kids back then, too, but the teachers actually took care of it. They didn't tolerate it. So, this was interesting, food. How did you create the meals that they made? And we realized that their money was scarce, so they had to sort of eat the same thing that mostly we wouldn't eat, maybe. But it tasted, smelled so good, though. How did you decide on their family meals, and how did you create the interactions? And these are based on real-life incidents that your kids did.
I mean, some of them were, right? Yeah, some of them were based on real-life events. And a lot of it was based on research, right? So you think about, there's a passage in the book, Fran, where the mother's on the telephone, you know, a couple times with the aunt, Aunt Phyllis, where she explains her side of the story. So the difficult part about, you know, putting everything through one character's point of view is you only get, you know, his feelings, his thoughts. So what I did is I incorporated, I think it was three or four telephone conversations that go on between the mom and her sister. And then you realize that they overspent that Christmas time, right? And they still need to pay their bills. So they're scrounging for money, right? So on one hand, you think about, you know, the mother just did all she could to spoil her kids and give them more than what she actually had to give. And then on the other hand, she's frying bologna, you know, in a pan, and serving that as dinner, right, with pickled beets. So a lot of that was research, and quite honestly, some of it was based on, you know, the things that I had lived through. We didn't come up with any type of money. So I look back on those memories now, you know, as very fond because, again, we weren't eating steak every night, but we were being taken care of. And it's funny, they weren't spending the money on themselves. They were still spending it on us, right? So, again, you know, that thank you letter to my father.
Well, when you wrote the book about the pickled bologna, I can remember my grandmother making salami and putting it in the pan.
Right,
And with eggs, and I go like, oh, God, I couldn't stand it. And then, of course, liver, that was even worse. That was really bad. when she said, no, you're going to have liver, and I go like, you're going to have it, and I'm going to have an egg. No, I'm not. That's right. Forget that. So you got what they could afford. I mean, seriously, we weren't rich back then, so whatever they made, it was what you made.
Right.
So why couldn't Alphonse get himself ready? He's my kind of kid. No, seriously.
Yeah, he was awesome. He's an awesome character in the book. You know what's funny?
Yeah.
Is he's based on my little brother, right? So the essence of how I feel about my little brother. I mean, it's, you know, I'm 52 years old. My brother's 2 years younger than I am. So he's 50 years old, and he's still my little brother. You know what I mean? I still feel that for him. Like, you know what I mean? So I don't think that ever changes, like the essence of how you feel about somebody. You know, some of the things may change in the relationship itself, but, you know, I think when you grow up with somebody, you know, you have that bond, that connection, which is what I really wanted to play through. Like, Cockroach takes a beating in this book, right? And not just physically. But it's you know, hopefully when people read the book, and I've had people come back to me and say they love the character, but they should also feel the love that Hervey has for him and Wally has for him. You know, he's their little brother.
Yeah, he does. My little brother was my birthday present on one of my birthdays.
Oh, wow.
Yes,
no
and
kidding.
he took pride in telling on me every day. If I didn't do something, he would just tell on me. My sister won't type my homework. My sister won't write my homework. And she's not helping me do this. And my mother would say, well, why aren't you helping them? Because she's going to school, not me. I'm doing the teaching, whatever.
Right.
But it was hilarious, yeah, till this day. So what time of family events were required? And tell us about Uncle Skinny and Aunt Phyllis. I don't like her. Really, seriously.
Yeah, well.
I did not like this lady.
No, I didn't like her either.
No, good.
I didn't like her either.
which is
why she's in the book. Yeah, but I think most, again, here's the tough part. I actually, when I finished the book, I put together what we call a beta team, right? So there was like a dozen folks. We read the manuscript, and then we sat and did like a three-hour meeting or a three-hour creative session, which was absolutely fantastic. And there were a few people that had a problem with Aunt Phyllis or had a problem with certain characters in the book. And what I had to remind them is this is from the perspective of a 12-year-old.
Yeah.
Right? So when I think about my aunts and uncles when I was 12, you know, I was getting in trouble for stuff and really kind of hating them for the fact that, you know, they were diming me out to my parents and this. And then as you grow older, you realize, you know, they were adults and I was 12 years old. And that's really the perspective in this book. I wanted Uncle Skinny to be crazy, absolutely nuts, and I think we pulled that off. I wanted Aunt Phyllis to be almost vile in the book, which he wouldn't see her that way as an adult. But again, as a 12-year-old, I think that really sticks. And I think a lot of – I've had readers come back to me and say, oh, my God, I had this one aunt that I hated having to kiss or, you know what I mean, to greet, or I had this one uncle who was crazy. So it kind of works. And it's really about making – because it's fiction, right, so I'm making all of this up. It's really about trying to make it, even though it's fictional, trying to make it as real and relatable as possible so people can relate to the story.
Well, I felt like I was living it with them, and I was freezing every time they went outside.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
So why did their mother make them stay outside during school vacation? That's unusual, and they should have been doing homework.
Yeah.
But instead, they abused themselves, and they got into so much trouble. So how did you create that? I was cracking up. I was like, oh, my God. I could see my mother doing that. But that, you need some fresh air. Go play in the snow. Yeah. Not where I live, but we did.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we were outside. I mean, we were literally outside. So the whole bread bags thing, and I'm sure we're going to get into it, but, you know, when we were kids, you'd put your socks on, then you put bread bags on, and then you'd put you know, the rubber boots over, so you created that layer. But We were outside, and you know, it could be freezing cold, it could be snowing. We were outside. In the book, what I wanted to explain, and I did it again through one of the conversations with Aunt Phyllis, is they live in an apartment house above a real estate agency, right? And there are people working downstairs all day long. So had she allowed them to stay in the house and act like the animals that they were at that age, they probably would have been evicted from the apartment.
Yeah.
So in a very strange way, she actually saves them from having to move into the city, you know what I mean, which was, you know, back then it was something that you dreaded because you didn't know it. It was something unknown. You know, it would have been absolutely fine. But so and that's a lot of what's going on in this book is, you know, you have again, this little boy's perspective, and then you have reality that he doesn't mm-hmm. completely understand because he's 12 years old.
Now, this part really I loved. I wish I had known about this back then, that you can put bread bags over your socks. So what was the significance of that? I thought that was absolutely so cool because I didn't have leather boots, people. I had the rubber kind.
Right.
I didn't
designer
shoes and stuff like that. And how did you decide to create that? Because that was hilarious. Really, seriously.
Yeah,
that was really cool.
Again, we convene the beta team. Normally when I write a book, and I put out about a book a year, normally when I write a book, I have the title first. So usually within the first chapter, the title will come to
uh-huh.
me. This title did not come until the very end of the book, right? And it was actually
uh-huh.
suggested by one of the beta team members. But because, you know, when you looked at the bread bags, it was such a big part of the book because it defines their economic status, right? If they had L.L. Bean boots that were expensive, they wouldn't need bread bags. So as soon as you put bread bags into the boots, it automatically tells you that, you know, they didn't have a ton of money. It tells you where they live. It has to be a cold environment. So this is based in New
mm-hmm.
England in the wintertime. I really took the blizzard of 1978. I brought it into 1984
mm-hmm.
And created that nor'easter. And because I set the whole thing in a week and a half in 1984, I brought the blizzard in so that the parents could be stuck in the house with them. Again, creating more of an opportunity or a setting for that mayhem and that chaos. So a lot of it, you know, was very, very intentional. It was being, you know, I finished the book and then we'd layer more stuff onto it and layer more stuff onto it. And then finally it became, you know, bread bags and bullies. The tentative title for this book was Winter
mm-hmm.
Break 84. And we ended up scrapping that and I put in the new title.
No, that wouldn't have done it. No, seriously, that wouldn't have done
no.
it. What got me was when Cheryl said, do you want to read this? And I said, yeah, because the title could
right.
either get you or not, although they can either pan the book or not. And the title matches what's in the book. And that's the good
right.
part. Because Winter Break of 84, so what? Not really.
Yeah, I agree with you. Even the cover. I mean, we brought in, you know,
the
I
cover's
have a friend
great.
Who's a renowned, yeah, the renowned artist. And then we brought in a web designer. And we went to my brother-in-law's house and my sister's house, and we shot through the window and put all the toys up on the windowsill. And then he created a winter scene outside. But it just works perfectly, right? When you look at the cover, it's basically looking
yeah,
out
right
the boy's yeah, the boy's bedroom window, right? So
that's so cool. That is so cool. I had to use a cemetery and dead bodies.
Right.
No, seriously,
right.
It did. It was scary. So tell us about, I don't think I would do it either. The father has a habit of picking up strangers. And you tell kids, don't pick up strangers, and yet he did.
Right.
How come?
Yeah. Well, back then, my father did. And the one thing I did want to
my father would too.
Was, yeah. I mean, they picked up hitchhikers. It was really strange. But I think it was a different time, too, right? So
yeah.
What I really wanted to kind of portray in this book is that the father's a little bit sideways, right? I mean, the way that he teaches
yeah.
his sons. But he's also teaching them the right things, right? So he goes out of his way to help people. You know, he'll help
mm-hmm.
anybody in need. And I really, really wanted
yeah.
to bring that forward. Because the book is also about breaking childhood fears,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's two episodes where he picks somebody up. The first time, you know, it's the old-timer, you know, who needs to get a can of gas to get his car running. And the second time is the hitchhiker who's bleeding. And that's when we create almost like that living nightmare where the son's in the car and he's just
yeah
absolutely freaking out because this could go a different way, right? But the father saves this guy's life and then in turn teaches his son that, you know, had we not stopped, this, you know, and had we kind of succumbed to our own fears
yeah.
and not stopped, this man would have died.
Now, the other place that I would never go is the cellar. Why didn't Wally
right.
want to go there? Why didn't Alphonse want to go down there? I'm with you, Alphonse. I wouldn't go either, especially if you don't know
yeah.
what's down there. How come they decided to go? Why did they think that was the greatest place to go? Well, they got away from their parents. They can do whatever they want.
Yeah, they get away from their parents, and they get out of the cold, right? So they get out of the elements.
Yeah.
And I think most people, you know, if they had a cellar, I know in New England, You know, most cellars or foundations are built out of stone if they're older, mm-hmm. right? So they're automatically creepy. And then you throw a big black furnace in the middle of the place, right, an oil burner. So that creates that monster type effect, right? So it's almost what I try to do is create this crypt down in the cellar where they go down there. But in order to be down there out of the elements, they also have to overcome their fears as well, right? And that's when I put in the big wheel race and, you know, started to create this fun where they get out of the – it's so funny. The mother doesn't want them in the house because of the people working downstairs, so they end up in the cellar making more noise than they would have upstairs. But again, it's a lot of it's about that, the ironies of growing up.
I think that was so cool, though. But their house was, like, really not in good shape. So how does it make
right.
it difficult for the boys? And how come, well, I didn't have cable TV till a long grade after that, way after that, when we could afford it. So how did they feel about cable TV? And why do we get a feeling that, like my grandmother, the mother owned the TV for her soap operas. My grandmother had 3 soap operas that she watched, and God help you if you didn't want to watch them. So how
right.
come she owned the TV? I know, and she watched the same thing my grandmother did. Seriously.
Yeah, she did. Yeah, I mean, there was only one TV in the house, right? It was a Zenith 25-inch floor model. Thing probably weighed 2,000 pounds, you know, in an oak case. And, you know, the parents back then, I mean, today, and I'm not, when I say today, I'm talking about myself with my own kids, right? We're walking a room, and I might be watching something, and I'll let them have the remote to watch what they want, right? Back in the day, mm-hmm. I mean, that didn't happen, right? My father was watching one of his shows. He watched the show. And you kept quiet. If my mother was watching her soap operas, same deal, mm-hmm. right? And she'd be smoking a cigarette with the ashtray stand on the side of her. It was a different time. But when we got cable, then all of a sudden MTV is a thing, and it becomes like an addiction. So every chance mm-hmm. that they get to actually watch cable television, they do, because it changes the way that they see the world, and it kind of opens up, you know, their eyes to a lot of things they've never seen before.
I know. Tell us why Aunt Phil, you know, my Aunt Phyllis reminded me of one of my aunts, my Aunt Tommy. And I loved Aunt Tommy. And why was Aunt Phyllis so critical of their mother? And why didn't she just tell her, go like, don't even think about it?
Yeah, and I think, again, that was, you know, between, so you're looking at the whole thing through the eyes of a 12-year-old. And I'm sure the mother, you know, there were a couple of times that the mother came back at Aunt Phyllis. I mean, Aunt Phyllis had called one of the kids a name and had criticized one of her sons, and she came back at her and basically told her to mind her business, watch your mouth, I don't want to hear that language again in front of my kids. So some of that stuff goes on. Aunt Phyllis in the book doesn't have any children, so her perspective is a little bit different. But I think it works within the dynamics of this family to create, again, those comedic type of situations, because the aunt doesn't understand what it's like to have kids. The mother is using the aunt as a sounding board, right, and complaining about her own children. But then when the aunt says something, she defends her kids. So it's one of those funny things. And I think, again, you know, reality-based. I mean, I had a couple mm-hmm. aunts who could be incredibly critical of my mother, and I watched my mother not say anything to them. If they said something about us, my siblings and I, my mother would go nuts, right? So she would defend us before she would defend herself, mm-hmm. and I wanted to kind of highlight that in the book.
No, nobody messed with my mother. Didn't mess with Ruthie. As a matter of fact, nobody did. None of us ever got in trouble, because she never yelled, she never screamed, she never raised her voice. She gave you that Ruthie look, and you knew you were dead meat. That's it.
Right.
And you didn't want to know what was going to happen after. No. So why was the father so rough and gruff on him? Was it because they were guys and he didn't want them to be, like, you know, afraid of the world? He was kind of rough.
Yeah,
and they really praised them to tell them they were really good kids, basically, despite the fact that they used to kill each other. But they're basically good
right.
kids.
Yeah, so, and they were good kids because of their parents,
yeah.
right? And that's another thing I wanted to bleed through. So the father's tough on them, but he's, you know, they have 3 boys that are all about a year, you know, 2 years apart from each other.
Yeah.
The boys are aggressive, so he's trying to raise them to be quote-unquote men. But, you know, by doing that, you know, he has to be tough on them, right? He absolutely has to be tough on them so that he can teach them the lessons he wants to teach them. And he doesn't want them to be soft. But, again, if you look at his world, you know, he's a blue-collar worker. He's, you know,
mm-hmm.
kind of a, you know, comes from a tough background. So that's the one thing I wanted. Like, he's not the perfect father by any stretch, right? But he was perfect for them. And that was the message I wanted to put across.
What about Wally? I felt so bad for him because the mother wanted him to have the paper. He wanted the paper route. But she wanted the paper route. She took money from him. I know that. What was going to change for him at home and why? She said he had to pay room and board. I mean, I started working when I was 10 in my dad's cleaning store. And yet I didn't have to give money for that. But when I started teaching, I did. So how did he feel about that? You know, that he had to live, he didn't know if he was going to be thrown out of the house, basically. He wasn't sure.
Yeah, I think with Wally, though, right,
On
the paper road, he thinks that she's taking money from him, and what she's doing is putting the money aside. So she's actually taking money. Right, he doesn't know that because he's going to spend all of it. He'll just kind of like bleed right through it. So, and again, you don't find that out until she has a conversation with her sister, saying that, you know, if we don't take some of his money and put it aside for him, he's going to, you know, waste all of it, right? And he needs the money to get a car when he gets old enough and to buy his own insurance. So these guys were raised to be self-sufficient, right, and raised to be resourceful. But she wanted them to have a little bit of a nest egg.
They had a lot of backbone, too. So this was the fun scenes. When the blizzard comes and they can't go outside and they can't hide in the cellar too often, what happens what they do as a family, as a unit? Because that was hilarious. And my favorite expression is what any mother would say, wait till your father gets home. Don't even think it.
Right.
Yeah. So how did what did they do as a unit at home? Because they were stuck at home for a while. Until
at first, it's exciting, right, when you get stuck in the house. You know, you don't have to go to school. All the roads are kind of shut down. So it's exciting. And the father's never home. So now he's home too. So they're super excited. And then how long does it take before that wears thin, right? But they're still, you know, the mother's cooking all these different foods. And you know, they're playing these games, Atari 2600. They're watching TV. And then you take it to the next level when the power goes out. And then that's cool, right? Because you get to play board games and your Rubik's Cube and all that other stuff. And how long does it take before that wears thin? And then once that runs out, then it's cabin fever, right? Everybody's at each other's throats. And I think that creates more comedy than anything, right? Where, you know, they've kind of had it with each other. And as much as it seems like a glorious time to be stuck in the house, it's tough. It's very frustrating.
At that point, I would clap and say I'm going to school. But you know what? You brought in my favorite book in the whole world, To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yes,
when you started
too.
To read that, I love that. I got in trouble for that. I worked with a sixth grade class the second year, and I did that with them. I read To Kill a Mockingbird. That's how smart they were. And they did the trial both ways, and my principal looked at me and go, they're smart. They can handle it. The parents thought it was great.
Right.
And he just looked at me and said, you didn't really do that. I go, yeah, I did with the black jury and a white jury, and a black defendant and a white one. And I wanted them to understand that prejudice is wrong and that this guy got, you know, framed for no reason. He didn't do anything really wrong. And they got it. He didn't get it, but he got it. When I wanted to do Huckleberry Finn, he told me I couldn't do it. So sad. I mean, what's the big deal? The kids thought it was great. So let's get back to the present. Well, what does Wally learn before riding the bus again? And what about Alex in the present? Because Wally, good for him.
Yeah, well, Wally had to stand up for himself. Had to. In fact, if you remember, when Herbie says to his father that his brother needs help, right? The bully's big and this and that. And the father says to him, he's going to take care of it. Right? This is an opportunity for him to stand up. So he needs to get past his fear and stick up for himself. If he doesn't, then the bully's going to continue to torment him. So,
that's right.
As you know, Wally takes it to him, right? And, you know, so when you come back to the present and, you know, Herbie's trying to tell his son how to stick up for himself, there's obviously going to be an intervention where Herbie goes and talks to the principal and, you know, there'll be that type of stuff. And he doesn't tell him that you need to fight, but he does tell him, you know, you can't let anybody put their hands on you, right? And this will never end. I mean, a bully is a bully, right? Until you stop that bully.
That's right.
So it's a really, really, really tough lesson to teach a kid. I've had, you know, I had one of my sons was, you know, a little bit on the timid side growing up. I put him into karate, and it wasn't to fight, but it was to build confidence in him, right? Because you don't know it until you know it, right? You don't know that. Sometimes you don't even have to fight, but you do need to stand up for yourself. And once you do, all that torture and torment that you've had, you know, mm-hmm. kind of dissolves. It goes away, you know. And that was a big, big piece of this book.
Well, I taught the kids how to talk it out. And I said, words are sometimes better and get the bully better than using your hands. Because if you can really, you know, let them have it right between the eyes, what can I say? And, you know, peer mediation did work to a point. What I find that is that in my school, I wouldn't tolerate it. The teachers wouldn't tolerate it. But sometimes the principals don't know what to do about it. They don't.
Right.
They don't. They just, you know, back off. And two parents will come in and they're ready to kill each other because the kids are bullying. We had an incident once where this parent actually came into a classroom and tried to beat up a child. She scratched her face. And Ms. Brilliant over here ran in, grabbed the kid and got her out of there and got the class out of there. And my friend was a karate expert. So it's hard. You have to be able to stand up. So what steps did the school need to follow? And what are some websites on focusing on bullying? Because it happens every single day. And from what I read in the news and on papers and people still teaching, teachers are getting bullied too because the kids are not listening.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a cultural thing, right? I know my wife's an elementary school principal, right? So, and she has a population of almost, I think, right around 500 kids. So in her school, and it's taken a few years for her to implement this, but in her school, it's actually not cool at all to bully somebody, right? So it almost becomes like the vast majority of the school would look down on a bully to the point where somebody wouldn't want to bully anybody because they no longer fit in, right? So it becomes a cultural thing, right? I think today times have changed where I think children are probably more open with their parents now. I know for me, my father was tough to talk to, right? And I made sure as I raised my children that I was not, right? And for me, it was like, if you have a problem, I can help you figure it out. It doesn't mean that I'm going to be able to completely take care of it. You're probably still going to have to do something, right, to take care of yourself. But we're going to talk it through. A lot of that type of stuff where I think things have changed. Again, the downside for this generation is social media. I don't think that they, you know, when it's happening, I don't think they can get away from it. You know what I mean?
No.
So if they don't speak up, then that's when you start to see, you know, children who are suffering from depression up to and maybe even, you know, leading to suicide, right? So back then, you think about, you know, how many kids are committing suicide because they were getting bullied back in the 80s. I would venture to guess that the number was much smaller because, you know, they were, you know, standing up for themselves, right, taking care of business. And I'm not saying that, you know, fighting, you know, fist fighting is the way to do it, but you do have to stand up.
I had parents that came in and killed each other, but I had to break up. I mean, seriously.
Right.
If kids get into trouble, whatever, rather than sit down and say, this is not the way to handle it, we got to talk it out, it gets scary sometimes. Sometimes you get hurt, and they don't mean to get you.
Yeah.
They meant to get somebody. I had a parent come in that wanted to kill her son. So I got in the middle of it and got a broken rib. And she apologized.
Wow.
She was scared. She said, you couldn't have me arrested. She says, I said, you weren't going for me. This was an accident. I said, but the next time you decide to go for someone, make sure you go for the wall, not your son. And he would have been in the hospital for good. Forget it. I mean, you got to really be careful. So this family was not rich. And these kids create their own form of entertainment like we all did back then.
Yeah.
How does that differ from the present? I mean, we didn't have the internet. I didn't have it. I had books. Books are I love books. So you give me like a whole bunch of books to read, and till this day I'm a happy girl. But what do kids amuse themselves with? I mean, Sorry, Monopoly, those are great games that kids should play, and Scrabble, all that stuff.
Right.
Bongo, all of them. What do they do today besides sit on the concrete? My brother, when my nephews were growing up, would not let them use their cell phones or watch certain television programs. Now it doesn't matter, they're in the 20s, but I didn't stop them from becoming so social media conscious because there's two social media.
Right. I wish I had the answer to that, I'll be honest with you, because I think Things have changed so much, and yeah. everybody's so reliant. And it's not just the kids anymore, if we're being honest, right? It's the parents too.
Yeah.
Everybody's
yeah.
so reliant upon their phone. I mean, I'll go pick up one of my daughter's friends and bring her to the house so they can hang out, and they'll both be
uh-huh.
on their phones. You know, they're sitting on the couch, they're on their phone, and I'll tease them and ask them if they're texting each other, and they'll start laughing. But it's like, why would you spend time together if you all you're gonna do is be on your phone anyway? So. To me, that's their lifeblood, and as much as I complain about it, you know, I look around me, there's a lot of adults that are doing the same thing, right? And in some cases, myself included.
I know. I went to Manhattan for the Thriller Fest. I get invited. That's my perk for doing reviews for no money, which I don't care. And they invite me to the Thriller Fest at the Grand Hyatt. And as I get out of the cab, or we walk around Manhattan, it is the quietest place in the world. People are just walking on their cell phones. Nobody's talking.
Yeah.
Everybody is walking. And it's really, and they're from many, many different countries in the world. And I'm going like, what could you possibly have to say that you're going to get killed crossing the street? I mean, I had two girls. It was hilarious. They were in the bathroom texting each other. I said, you could talk to each other. I thought we weren't allowed to talk. You're allowed to breathe, too. What can I tell you? I used to crack up laughing. Yeah. No, the problem is they also care about what other people think. And that's what you can't, that's got to stop. Kids have to worry about, I'm a wonderful person, I don't care if you don't like me. So what? They're worrying about what their friends think, about how they look and how they act. And that's something that parents can't seem to stop either, yeah. So if Wally and Herbie and Alfonso lived now in the 2020 or in the 1990s, or in the present, would they have a different outlook in life? And would they have lived the same way?
Yeah, probably not, right? Because they'd probably be on their cell phones, right? So
yeah.
Social media back in, you know, the book takes place in 1984. Back in 1984, social media was you either get on your Schwinn or your Huffy, right? And ride your bike into the neighborhood and gather your friends and then go play a wiffle ball game or build a snowman, whatever, you know. I think today what would happen is they'd all have their cell phones. Right, they're Apple iPhones, and they would be doing the same thing that kids are doing today. So I think it's a complete cultural transformation. I don't think that they would be as rough and tumble as they were back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I even think the parents' outlook would be very different as well. Right? So I'm not saying it's any better or any worse, but it would certainly be different.
It's really sad that you can't have conversations. You go out with people to dinner, and they're all sitting there on their cell phones. And at times I go like, Earth to so and so, are you here? Are you here?
The
only thing that gratifies me is that when I text my nephews and say, how you doing? They answer me in 5 minutes and say, how's my favorite aunt? So that does help. It helps us stay in touch. Cell phones I find are important to a phone if they get in trouble, if something's wrong. That's great. But to walk in the street and just sit and talk on your phone all day long is not the answer. I don't know if parents could say from 5 to 6 we're having dinner, put the phone away. That's what my brother does. We did when they were growing up.
Yep.
Not that my nephew didn't have it
under
the table to text me anyway, but whatever.
Right.
So what lessons can parents learn and kids learn after reading this book? I mean, and what happened when the snow finally ended and they had to go to school? Were they happy or were they saying, oh, I wish it was still snowing?
Yeah, I think there was a mixed feeling about that, Fran, right? Like, you know, first of all, Wally, you know, Wally's going back. The first thing he needs to do is face this bully, right? So
yeah,
as much as that's a terrifying thing, at least he's going to get it over with, right? So we have that going on. I think it's just a mixed bag, right? Like it's funny when people look back on their time in school, right? Most people look back fondly and like, oh, what a great time we had, this and that. But if you really, really think about it, I think the memory is kind, right? In most cases, you know, kids didn't want to go to school; they'd rather stay home, type of deal. But then when you stay home long enough, you realize, well, that's not the answer either, right? You'd rather be in school. So I think it was a mixed bag, and it was something that was really fun for me to kind of play with. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I don't think I had very many snow days growing up, seriously. But then elementary school and junior high school were fun. They didn't have that many days. They didn't give us off like that, like they do now, no.
Right.
So sad. And if we did have a snow day, it was like, do your homework, study it, memorize it, and watch television. You can't do that. Like, I wasn't allowed to sit and watch television. Uh-uh. So what scene do you think is the funniest in the book and why?
Oh, wow.
There were quite a few of them that were hilarious.
Yeah, I think for me, the scenes with Aunt Phyllis are very funny because she is such a contrast. And again, you know, she plays like that vile character. So it almost like opens the door to whatever when it comes to her. You know what I mean? For me, a lot of the interactions between the brothers, especially with Cockroach, kind of crack me up because, you know, again, the brothers may come across as mean, but they're really actually trying to train him in a very, very strange way. But, you know, that's what's going on.
What about Wally and his father in the present? How did their relationship change? Because that last page is really touching. It really is touching.
Yeah, I think what happens is we grow up, right, and the stuff that we, you know, I don't want to say hate because that's a heavy word, but the stuff that we weren't, yeah, that we hated in our parents, right, when you become an adult or a parent, then you realize why people did what they did, right? So he gains respect for his father for everything that was done. Again, parents are not perfect, and they weren't intended to be in this book, not by any stretch. But I think he feels grateful to his father that, you know, he learned everything that he could learn so that he could become the father that he is. Do you know what I mean? And he was kind of happy that it wasn't easy on him, right? He kind of had to earn it coming up, so...
I know.
I think it's a respect.
I had to get 100 on every test or I had to write it over from scratch.
Wow.
Yeah, it was tough. But it's funny because my mother didn't do it to my sister. But then I used to, you know, you were talking about your brother being younger than you. My sister's a year younger than me. But because she got married at 17, I told everybody she was 5 years younger. 5 years older.
Really?
5 years older. I said, how could you know she's 5 years old? And they believed me. Unfortunately, when they saw her tombstone, they realized that I was lying all these years, but I didn't care. I got away with it for a very long time. And I said, I still look younger. What can I say? So we crack it up.
Right.
So what are you writing next, and where can we find out more about you and your work? Because this book is so good. I'm not giving it away. Those of you that want it, you're going to have to buy it on Amazon. Forget it. This one stays in my library. I want somebody else to read it.
Thank you, friend. I appreciate that. Well, I've been writing for 25 years. I've written 17 books. I have never written a sequel until now.
Really?
I'm working on the sequel, as we speak. Yeah. So what I did is I love the character so much, and I love the storyline so much. And it's not heavy, as you know. It's a kind of a lighthearted read. There's a few heavy scenes in the book. So I've been writing the sequel. My hope is to have it out either by the end of this year, 2020, or, you know, early in 2021. But it will be the same characters. So we're going from February of 1984 until the summer of 1984. So I didn't think that the book was done. It didn't feel done to me.
I agree.
After I finished writing it. So, let's bring them into the summer where I can bring them to the beach and amusement park, kind of just open up the doors and let them, you know, run like the animals they are, right? So, again, just meant to be funny. You know, you're looking at 6 months of growth, so you'll see a little bit of an evolution in the characters themselves and how they play roles within the family. But super excited about it. I'm having a blast writing the sequel. I can actually be reached on Facebook. So I'm all over Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I have my own website, www.stephenmanchester.com. I like people to know that I am approachable. So a lot of times a reader will reach out to me. I guarantee to get back to somebody if you want to start a dialogue about a book or whatever. I always appreciate that. And as you said, you know, my stuff is found on Amazon, so you can get it in print copy or in the ebook version. So far, it's been really a cool ride. The book came out at the end of October, so quite a few people picked it up for the Christmas season. But the book is really set in the winter, so I think, you know, as we're kind of settling into winter now, it's a good read, right, for the winter. So that's what I'm hoping people
get. Well, all I can tell you is you gotta send them to my favorite place, Coney Island, or Rye Beach, or Ocean Beach, or all the crazy places that I grew up. and seriously. My favorite was Coney Island, and I couldn't sing, but my sister could sing, and my father made us make records. It was hilarious. I mean, totally hilarious.
That's fun.
So thank you so much. This has been fun.
Thank you.
And as soon as you have, what, do you have a title for the new book or not yet?
Yeah, no, I do. And the working title right now is Lawn Dots and Lemonade, right? So I don't know if people remember, you know, playing lawn dots when they were kids, but super dangerous game, like these big darts that were heavy. We just whipped them up in the air and kind of ran for cover. So Lawn Dots and Lemonade, and it kind of fits into the, you know, Bread Bags and Bullies Survive in the 80s. This one will be Lawn Dots and Lemonade Survive in the 80s. You know, if the books take off, really take off, we'll probably turn it into a series. But for now, I'm definitely going to put out the sequel. Yeah.
Well, maybe somebody – are you going to have Wally tell the story or somebody else?
You know what? It's a great question. I mean, right now it's still going through Herbie.
I like that. Yeah, Herbie, yeah. I would have somebody else tell the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I want to thank you. This has been fun, and thank you very much. You made the sun come out because it was snowing before. And I was going to say, I'm going to have a snow day, but I'm not. But everybody, have a great time, a great day. Have a wonderful day. It's beautiful outside. It's only 30 degrees up in, I don't know where you are, but in here it's like freezing and cold outside. And once again, thank you so much. And I hope I get it before it comes out so I can give you some pre-whatever release
reviews.
No,
absolutely. No, I'll definitely send it to you for sure.
Thank you so much. Everybody have a great day, and bye.
Thank you, friend.